Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
An historic election in the state of Georgia. It was a runoff election between two Democrats and two Republicans. Both Democratic candidates won. Democrat John Ossoff beat GOP Senator David Perdue, and Raphael Warnock beat Senator Kelly Loeffler. This will now mean that the U.S. Senate is split 50-50, which means that the presiding person, which will be the vice president, Kamala Harris, will have the deciding vote. A landmark moment. Let's bring in our good friend Andreas Preuss, radio host of WRAS 88.5 Atlanta, Georgia, to take us through that historic election in Georgia. Good morning, Andreas.
Good morning to you and Neil, the people of Singapore, and those listeners around the world. Before your first question, I did want to, here's a brain teaser for you.
Okay.
Do any of you know who Fred Capps was?
The name is vaguely familiar, but
Fred Capps came after the Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Oh, that's right.
And you can imagine, here you got me, right, this intellectual Nobel Prize winner. And let's face it, Glenn, as you know, the reason we got into journalism is we didn't have much intellectual capacity to begin with. So here I am, the magician who came after the Beatles.
Not everyone can do a segue like that, you just did. So you get kudos for that.
You've got the anecdote of the day sewn up already. So that's just superb. Fred Capps. I knew that somewhere, Glenn. Fred Capps.
Andreas, what's your hat say? Is that for the radio station?
It's for the radio, Album 88, that's the radio station.
Nice. Okay. We got to talk about that one of these days. But first, let's talk about the election in Georgia, because that was huge. It was razor thin, was it not?
It was. Historic election. I know Neil last week asked me, what do I predict? I didn't predict that the Democrats would sweep. I thought at least one. I didn't say this on, because like I told you, Glenn, we're not in the business of prediction. But I would have thought at least David Perdue would have won. Because he was running against a fairly newcomer, young person, already lost an election. But that both of them were out was stunning. And I think that also kind of set the whole week up for, the chaos on Capitol Hill as well. So, it was razor thin. Ossoff, Perdue, there was a 45,000 vote difference. And then Warnock, Loeffler was 80,000. So two percentage points in the Warnock, Loeffler. Now, Warnock will become, when he's sworn in, the first black senator from Georgia. Pretty historic moment there. You had John Lewis, a congressman from Georgia, who recently passed. Mm-hmm. John Ossoff, used John Lewis as kind of his mentor, at least in his ads. And John Ossoff becoming the first Jewish senator from Georgia in the U.S. Senate. So those are two historic moments for the state.
And what do you put that down to? The changing demographic around Atlanta, more African-American middle-class suburbs, or the mobilization on the ground, or President Trump's involvement, or all of the above, or none of the above? You're there.
Save something for him to talk about, Neil. Come on.
All of the above. D. The answer is D. I think it's all of the above, but also we have to remember the pandemic and the mail-in votes. So like my wife, tonight we're talking, I'm going on with my good friends in Singapore, and she said, people got up off their keisters, right, to go vote. And I said, really, they just got off their keisters to go to the mailbox to put something to send to the U.S. Postal Service. So you had a massive amount of mail-in ballots, as we discussed last week, right? And you had a lot of early voting. And I think that traditionally, especially in runoffs, I mentioned this last week, Republicans always show up to vote. I mean, it's rain, sleet, they're there. This time, those mail-in ballots, the early voting certainly contributed to the victories, even though they were razor thin. So all of that, plus the Trump situation, plus, yes, you have changing demographics in Georgia, especially in Fulton County and the surrounding 23 counties in the metropolitan area. Yeah.
Yeah. Andreas, when we look at that map, it was Metro Atlanta. It was Columbus, Georgia, down in the southwest. Mm-hmm. And it was it looked like toward the east. There was a
like
couple
Augusta.
Some small areas where they play the Masters and all that. But those were blue, meaning Democrat. But most of the rest of the state was pretty solid red, was it not? If not a little bit pink.
Yeah, and then, you know, we mentioned a lot of these counties, you know, I think there's 125 counties in Georgia. They're not meant, there's not people there. These are rural or semi-populated. There's a lot of farmland. So you don't, they're all Republican, but there's just not a lot of numbers there that can turn an election or hold on to election. Like Neil mentioned, this is the first time since 92 that Georgia has turned blue. Yeah. So, yeah, it's changing demographics, and you can especially see that in the city of Atlanta. In the northern suburbs, Sandy Springs, Alpharetta, those kind of northern suburbs of the, you know, metropolitan or the downtown Atlanta, I think just a lot of, you know, Republicans are just fed up with the current situation with the president, and, you know, they think it was time for a change. And you know, like I said, both Loeffler and Perdue were campaigning on the Trump ticket. You know, so they were basically all together in this thing, and then they started distancing themselves a little bit towards the end, like we mentioned. How can you declare an election illegal, yet you want people to come vote in it? So, yeah, I think all that contributed.
And what was the mood, before we move on to what followed at Capitol Hill, what was the general mood in Atlanta, you're there, after the Democratic victories? I'm very curious to know, was it a sense of euphoria, relief? I mean, obviously, as you say, it's fairly split in certain areas, red, blue. What was the general mood in Atlanta?
I think if you look at your Facebook feed, most of it was positive. And most of it was attributed to organizing, and the ability to get people engaged, that this matters, you know. But there were also some other things that, you know, look, I heard you talking about elections. They're not always, you know, that they're not perfectly 100% legal or fair sometimes. You had people that did not vote in the first election that could vote in the runoff. You had domicile law, or, you know, you could move to Georgia, and some people did, to vote in the runoff. So, you know, those things are kind of fuzzy, really.
Yeah. And now moving ahead, I have to say, Andreas, unfortunately, you do come across as Nostradamus now. So anyone who doesn't believe me, go and listen to last week's podcast, because you painted a very, let's be honest, your words, a very Mad Max kind of scenario of the way the mood was on the ground in certain urban centres. And just days after we chatted, what happened at Capitol Hill. The ground was mobilised by President Trump, his children, Mayor Giuliani. What was your thoughts on that, and what was the reaction in Atlanta, Georgia, to what was happening at Capitol Hill?
Well, I think, you know, this bottle of bourbon here speaks volumes for the way people are feeling today after a week. It's unopened, by the way. I know you can't drink liquor on air. So, you know, but I think people were shocked. They were stunned. They were saddened. You know, one of my child called. She said she was crying when she saw it. I mean, but as an objective journalist, you do have to look at the other side. And I know that's the side that a lot of people dismiss. And the people that were there, now, it was a criminal act. Windows were broken, as you've seen. It was criminal trespass. There were assaults on police officers. I mean, this was totally a criminal act. They themselves consider this an act of civil disobedience, which is something that is a legitimate form of protest, but, you know, it just was not, you know. And then really the big question is, how could this happen at the U.S. Capitol? I mean, I assume the Singapore Parliament building has security, and they would be able to predict there's a crowd of 100,000 people down the street. Maybe they'll come this way. Maybe I want to get more police. Maybe I want to get troops. Maybe I want to get tanks. Maybe I don't want to show a show of force. So really the security component is a major storyline right now, that, you know, figuring out the investigation. People have been fired. People have quit. Capitol Hill police chief, the sergeant of arms of the house. These people have resigned because it was a security lapse. Yeah. I mean, that is very simple to understand. But the reaction in Atlanta, I mean, it was just, people were just watching and stunned. You know, it was, I wouldn't say it's like watching 9/11. That was a terrorist attack, and it was very visual. This was a visual event, too. I mean, just the whole takeover of the Capitol by these folks. And if you looked at the crowd, you know, there were families there. There were women. There were children. There were all colors. And it wasn't, this wasn't just everybody was in a mob mentality, but certain bad actors, we've heard that before, especially with the protests in Portland or Seattle, where they did smash windows of federal building in Seattle, or, you know, break, you know, hit on the doors of the Supreme Court. That was something that happened during the one of the recent Supreme Court nominee hearings. Civil, you know, civil disobedience versus terrorism. These are kind of, you know, these are polar opposites, really. Well,
this is where I might get
one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist.
Yeah, correct. Exactly.
This is where I was going to get, where I may get accused of false equivalence. But you raise an interesting point there. Lots of anger online of images of the police opening up the fences to let the protesters through and selfies being taken with police officers. Now there's news coming out that police officers, some of the people in the protesters were off-duty police officers, military personnel who flashed their badges. They would argue, wouldn't they, Andreas, that it's civil disobedience. American politics, American history, going back to the Tea Party, going back to fighting against the British Empire, was built on civil disobedience. So for some, and I'm not sounding like I'm on the side of the protesters, but for some, it's a very fine line in America, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, though it was a criminal act, and I think anybody can agree that it was a criminal act, it was trespass, it was destruction, it was vandalism. Look, somebody could have burned the Capitol down. And yes, there were pipe bombs and Molotov cocktails found in containers. They could have knocked statues down. They could have caused massive destruction because they were basically in charge of this building for 45 minutes. You know, at least the rotunda, I mean, that's one of the main symbols of American freedom. The statues in there, the paintings, the flags, you know, knock these things down, spray paint, set fires. That did not happen. Some offices were trashed. Some windows were smashed. Unfortunately, you know, the one lady was shot and killed by a police officer and then a police officer as well. So, you know, there was certainly violence, but it could have been a lot worse. So you have to kind of – the civil disobedience is not involving violence per se. That is destruction. So, yeah, it is a fine line. It is a fine line.
Yeah. Andreas, what is the feeling now? Of course, as Neil pointed out, as you've pointed out, many people are still very much on the side of these people had a right to be there. They had a right to protest the only way they felt they could and be heard about what they believed the outcome of the election was. But as we're now looking forward, you know, we've seen people losing their jobs already. There have been some state representatives who were there for the protest that are under fire.
Many arrests.
Arrests already, and of course, notwithstanding the discussion about possible 25th Amendment or impeachment proceedings against the president. As you have your ear to the ground in Atlanta, are any of those arguments getting a lot of traction, or are people saying, no, that's really not going to happen? People are just venting off steam right now. What does it sound like from your perspective, 9,000 miles away from Singapore?
Well, you know, the AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which is Atlanta's big paper, on their front page, AJC exclusive, Georgia attorney among those who broke into U.S. Capitol. So you are seeing – look, these people were not secretive. Plans were made. It was very well dispersed on social media. The intelligence was there, meaning the intelligence of the police to find out possibly what was going to happen. Thousands of pictures were taken. Hundreds of videos were taken. These have all been posted in a very prideful manner. I was there. I survived. Look what I did. You know, you've got, you know, like I said, this attorney here. You've got some politicians that were there. You've got, you know, but you've got the people, like I said, that were inside that were doing a criminal act. And then you had people outside that were just attending the rally because they're Trump supporters. And you are seeing, you know, it's something in the United States we call cancel culture. Have you heard?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yes, I don't know if that happens in Singapore. If you just disagree with the majority, you know, you're canceled, you're fired, you're just, you don't exist. And I am hearing stories about how a person that was just in the crowd is now being pressured to be fired or resign the position. Now, I'm not even talking about a high-level position. It could be a teacher, you know, a high school teacher who just believes in, you know, the values of Trump, and his picture was shown on the front page of the paper. That person would be pressured, I think, by the cancel culture to do that. Whether that's right or wrong, I mean, you know,
arguably that plays into the hands of the protesters, because they could equally say, well, you didn't do that at Black Lives Matter. You didn't arrest hundreds of thousands of Black Lives Matter protesters, and on it goes and goes and goes. So moving forward, again, crystal ball time, do you see many prosecutions? I mean, Rudy Giuliani, Don Jr. was actually heard, recorded, saying, this is a call to combat, this is a call to let's go. It would be arguably relatively easy for a lawyer to prove that that was an incitement to riot. Do you see criminal cases after January the 20th?
You know, I would think in our culture, cancel culture or democratic controlled government now, because it's the judiciary, the legislature, and the executive, that I think, you know, they want to proceed with these things. You know, there's also a kind of interesting thing, and this harkens back to the reconciliation hearings in South Africa, where did you work for Trump? You were a Trump supporter. You gave money to Trump. You know, is that something that could happen? I think it could. It seems like a possibility that people, there will be a call of reckoning. You know, that you supported this 4 years in office, therefore, are you, you know, apologetic? But really, that just once again feeds into the dissent,
yeah,
and feeds into the two sides and fomenting of the two sides. And then what's the media going to do when Trump is out of office? You know, we're not going to cover him?
Right.
Please.
Right.
Please.
Well, right. We certainly won't be hearing from him on Twitter, right? He's, now that he's been banned from Twitter and Facebook and, right, and other social media networks.
And he will not be at the inauguration.
And he won't be at the inauguration. Yeah. Andreas, we do have to leave it there. We're bumping up against the top of the hour. As you know, it's time for news, weather, and sport when we get to that time. But we do want to thank you for being with us again, as always. Looking forward to catching up with you again soon as we get more developments out of the U.S. And in the meantime, thanks for thanks for all that.
Thank you very much, guys.
We
have to let you go. We have Fred Capps coming up after the after the news.
Neil's just joking. Anyway, thanks, Andreas. Have a good weekend.
All right.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.